From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. An hour of sounds from radio's golden age, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with an episode of The Green Hornet, one of the creations of George W. Trendle of WXYZ Radio in Detroit, also famous for creating The Lone Ranger and Challenge of the Yukon. The Green Hornet enjoyed success not only as a long-running radio series, but also in comic books, the movies, and television. This broadcast, episode 348 in the series, originally aired on the Mutual Broadcasting System on June 8th of 1939, with Al Hodge starring as the Green Hornet, secret identity being newspaper publisher Britt Reed. It's Trouble Hits the Trolleys.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies that even the G-men cannot reach, the Green Hornet. Adventure, Trouble Hits the Trolleys. The events and characters depicted in this drama are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
Thanks. Some story in the Clarinet, mister. About the streetcar.
Yeah, I know all about it. Listen, kid, why don't you plug the Daily Sentinel instead of the Clarion?
Huh?
You're selling both of them, aren't you?
Sure, but that don't mean...
Sentinel's got a better story than the Clarion ever had.
No, it ain't, mister.
Don't tell me, sonny. I phoned it in myself. It's all over the front page.
Yeah, but it ain't as good as the Clarion story.
Now, listen,
well, take a look if you don't believe me. There's a Sentinel right here.
Well, I'll be... Hey, taxi! Taxi!
Clarion, here!
Look at that. Selling three clarions to every one of ours. The Daily Sentinel office. Step on it. A fine yarn this is. Why didn't we give it an eight-column head like the Clarion? And I don't even read a byline. Sometimes I figure maybe I'm working for the wrong outfit. Oh, this a headline. Accident delays streetcar service. There. Say, what's the matter with this taxi? I can make better time walking.
The Sentinel story, that streetcar business.
Nothing like the Clarion's, Mr. Reed.
In case the Clarion isn't happy unless it can be sensational. As long as I'm publisher of this paper, I'm not going to color any story to gain circulation. A lot of readers may want lurid yellow journalism, but they won't get it from the Sentinel.
I bet Lowry will be burned up, Mr. Reed.
Lowry? Why?
I imagine he expected a byline on this.
Bylines are reserved for scoops, or special features. Every paper in town covered this. Lowry knows that.
He ought to.
Lowry's one of the best reporters in the game, Miss Case. But once in a while, he lets his nose for news carry him to extremes.
Well, I guess every reporter looks for sensation.
Miss Case, there's something behind these accidents that doesn't strike me as being on the level.
Well, I did notice that there weren't any until about the last month or so.
Just when this man Fisher starts a campaign to operate buses in place of the streetcars.
Hey, Mr. Reed, I didn't notice that.
What's going on around here, Casey? The Clarion's beating us 3-for-1 up.
Oh, hello, Mr. Reed.
The streetcar story, is that it, Larry?
Well, yeah, that's it, boss. Of course, I know there weren't any passengers injured, and there was no real damage to speak of.
The Sentinel said that, Larry.
Well, I guess the Clarion stretched the truth a little.
A little? They called it a panic.
Any sign of panic that you saw, Larry?
No, one dame fainted when the door jammed, that's all.
The Clarion would call a bargain sale at a dress counter a panic.
But look, boss, I don't usually go out on a limb this way about a small-time accident. Only with that battle about the bus franchise coming up before the city council, this stuff is news.
Not the way you think, Larry.
Huh?
You recognize the name Fisher?
The guy who's angling for the bus franchise?
What's your opinion of him?
Offhand, I don't like him.
Well, that's the feeling of most people.
Nothing's ever been proved against him, has it, Mr. Reed?
No, Miss Case. He's very clever.
He may get his buses.
Yes, Larry. A month ago, the city council would have laughed at his demand.
They're not laughing now.
But don't you get it? Doesn't it strike you as odd that the streetcar lines should start running into trouble right when Fisher starts his campaign?
One more accident and he'll get that franchise.
Say, I must have been wearing blinders not to see it before. It's as plain as the nose on my face.
Plainer, if possible.
Lowry, I want to find out what's going on.
You and me both, boss.
If Fisher's responsible for the trouble the trolleys have been having, the Sentinel wants to know it.
Okay, I'll start digging up dope on Fisher.
Where he goes, who he sees, what he does, everything. Make it good and you get that byline.
Right.
And get me the district attorney, Miss Casey. You might have some stuff that'll prove useful.
So Fisher's the baby to go after.
Get the district attorney and put the call through to Mr. Reed's wire. You still alone, Raleigh?
Casey, there's one thing that burns me up.
Do tell, because you didn't get a byline.
No, it's the Clarion. Selling three papers to wire one. It isn't right.
The Sentinel could use a scoop, Lowry.
You're telling me. The next time trouble hits the trolleys, all I wish for is that Fisher's in the middle of it.
The middle of the wreck?
No, pal, the middle of the story.
I hope you're right, but I...
Yeah, I know. Fisher's too smart. But you heard the boss. I'm going after him anyway.
Absolutely no trouble, Grady. There's not a soul suspects those accidents weren't genuine.
And what more do you want?
Plenty.
The city council already has my report.
Those reports aren't strong enough.
Listen, Fisher, there's a limit.
When the limit is reached, I'm the one who'll call a halt, Grady, not you.
Now, hold on.
The city council will never act on reports like yours.
If you want stronger reports, you've got to have tougher accidents.
You're the city inspector, aren't you?
Sure.
Then fake those reports.
There's a limit to what I can fake, Fisher. When a door jams, I can't make it look like a smack-up. If the brakes stick, I can't say there ain't no brakes at all.
Why not?
Too many people can check up on me, that's why.
That bus franchise is going through, Grady. I don't care how.
That's your business.
And yours. If you want any dough from me, you'll see that.
Yeah? I get this, Fisher. I'm in with you, sure. I can use a cut of the gravy you're heading for, same as anyone else. I'm making my reports as strong as possible without no one getting wise, see?
You better.
Now you get that man of yours and the car barns to do a job on one of those streetcars so it'll really crack up.
And what?
I'll turn in a report that will spell ruin for the streetcar company just like that. You'll be in, Fisher.
The ones we have aren't strong enough, huh?
You'd be taking a chance. Fix another accident and you can't miss.
In that case, I might as well make sure.
Now, you're talking.
I'll get in touch with my man at once. This time, there'll be plenty for you and a district attorney, too.
You can't go in there.
I am in, sister.
By what right do you...
I bust in like this, Mr. Fisher, but I had a deadline to meet.
Oh, you're a reporter. And it's different to have a chair.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, nice place you got here, Mr. Fisher. Wish the Daily Sentinel would do as well by us.
The Daily Sentinel? I think maybe I'll be on my way.
Hey, if I'm interrupting something...
No, not at all. Goodbye, Fisher.
That guy sure was in a hurry.
He had an engagement.
Isn't he Grady, the city inspector?
Who?
Grady. Works for the city.
No, just a friend of mine. Now, what can I do for you, Mr. What did you say your name was?
I didn't say, but it's Lowry.
Oh, yes, Lowry, with the Daily Sentinel. Say, what happened to you boys on that streetcar story?
We had it.
The Clarion played it up big.
It wasn't important enough.
Not important. Think how many people ride on those streetcars.
A lot.
The lives of hundreds, thousands of people may be in constant danger, and you call it unimportant.
Get off the soapbox, Fisher. Everyone knows your angle.
Of course they do. I want my bus franchise to go through because the streetcar line is mismanaged, antedated, and a menace to the citizens of this city.
Buses are better, huh?
Much better. There's no comparison. Now, why don't the Sentinel get smart and help in my campaign?
Like the Clarion, huh?
Exactly. How about it, Lowry?
How about what?
You're in a position to do me some good, Lowry.
You mean a nice little follow-up story on the streetcar accident? Placing the blame on the management of the company?
That's the idea.
Or maybe an editorial?
Sure. Who knows? I might be able to do a favor for you in return.
It sounds pretty nice.
Sure it is. I knew as soon as you came in the door, you were a smart guy. What do you say?
Why, you chiseling, lying crook. You no good scheming grafter?
Now see here.
You see here. Try to bribe me, will you?
Bribe a reporter.
If you weren't smaller than me, I'd plaster you flatter than that rug.
Get out of my office.
It's a pleasure. And get this, Fisher. The Sentinel is going after you with both barrels. If this bus franchise of yours is as phony as you are, then all I hope is I'm the guy who writes it up. Boy, oh boy, will I scorch you.
That two-pint reporter talking to me that way. After I get through with that streetcar company, there won't be enough left. Brian, you know who this is? Now, I want you and Atwell to get busy. Now, that's right. Make it a real crack-up this time. The worst the streetcars ever had.
Atwell.
Yeah? What do you want, Moran?
Put down that wrench. We got a job to do.
You mean through
that? Never mind the name. What's the next car going out?
Number 618. Right over there.
Okay. Come on.
What's it going to be this time? The brakes? Another jammed door?
Open your lip and get moving. We're getting twice as much dough for this one. We're giving up the works.
Can you tell me where I get the streetcar for Parsons Avenue, officer?
Right here, lady, at the bottom of this hill.
Thank you.
Well, that's her now, just starting down the hill.
It's coming awfully fast.
Hey, look at that trolley. Why would he stop? He's out of control. He's heading this way.
Look out, it's going to crash!
My report of the streetcar accident shows that the cause of the crash was faulty safety equipment. There is definite evidence of criminal negligence on the part of the streetcar company. Signed, Grady, City Inspector.
The City Council hereby calls a special meeting to vote on the bus franchise. Signed, Hopkins, Chairman of the City Council.
District Attorney for this city, I am indicting the officials of the streetcar company for criminal negligence resulting in injury to passengers. Signed, Martin, District Attorney.
Constable Pepper, X-ray! District Attorney, 12 streetcar crash! City Council to vote on bus franchise! Constable X-ray!
I tell you, boss, I went over the whole setup with a fine-tooth comb. There's not a single string leading to Fisher.
What about Grady?
Not a thing.
He's calling on Fisher while you were there.
Oh, I knew it was him, but he's in the clear. His report on the crack-up has been checked and double-checked.
And if he wants to place the blame squarely on the streetcar officials, who's to stop him?
Those two new men in the car barns, you got anything on them?
Moran and Atwell?
You say they've been spending money freely. Did they explain it?
Yeah, claimed they wanted betting on a horse.
Try to check up on that.
Honest, boss, we're stymied. It's airtight all the way.
Gosh, I hate to think of a man like Fisher getting away with a stunt like this.
Me too, Casey.
Sometimes I'd like to take the law into my own hands.
What?
Well, honestly, Mr. Reed, isn't that the only way to catch these crooks?
Oh, Casey, hold on. There's only one gent who can get away with that stuff. And you don't look like the Green Hornet to me. Am I right, boss, or am I right?
Huh?
He says I don't look like the Green Hornet, Mr. Reed.
Guess nobody listens to me around here.
No, I heard you, Lowry. I was just thinking.
That evening, while Britt Reed was in his apartment, he spoke to Cato, his valet, and the only living man to know that Britt Reed is really the dreaded Green Hornet.
And that's the whole story, Cato. Fisher has his tracks covered from every angle.
What about Adwell Milan, Mr. Britt?
No good, Cato. Even if those two could be charged with the crime of damaging the streetcar, even if they were picked up, it wouldn't have to catch Fisher.
Why not?
There's no actual evidence to connect him with Fisher. He could deny he ever heard of them.
You look for something?
Writing paper. Oh, here it is.
Get the ink.
No, I don't want this ink. There'll be some of the other in this drawer. Yeah, here we are. I want the mask and gun, Cato. The car. Is the Black Beauty ready?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Quite a job disguising my handwriting. Now, the seal on the bottom.
Placing the letter in his pocket, Britt Reed went through a secret panel in his clothes press. With Cato, he walked through a narrow passage within the walls of the apartment house, then downstairs to the supposedly abandoned warehouse that housed the sleek black car of the Green Hornet.
Ready? All right, get in.
Once more, the powerful black car roared through the city streets, carrying the Green Hornet on his errand of justice. The curtain falls on the first act of our Green Hornet adventure. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments. To continue our story. A serious accident on the trolley line increased agitation to replace the streetcars with buses. Although the streetcar lines were blamed for the accidents, Biff Reed had reason to believe that they had been engineered by Fisher, who was out to grab the bus franchise. When ordinary methods failed to pin the guilt on Fisher, Britt Reed assumed the role of the Green Hornet to bring the criminal to justice.
I can't sleep, Sally. Tomorrow the council decides on the bus franchise. They'll vote against me.
Dad, they can't throw away all you've worked for. The streetcar lines are the finest in the country.
Not anymore, Sally. Not when people are hurt through my neglect.
Oh, it's not your doing, Dad.
It's my responsibility.
Oh, Dad.
Fisher will get his franchise. Put me out of business.
Here's something to make you sleep.
Leave it on the night's table, Sally.
There. The lights are out, too. Good night, Dad.
Good night. No good thinking about it. Might as well do as Sally says. I'll open the window first. Fresh air.
Don't move, Hanson.
What? Who are you? What are you doing out there?
Never mind that. Take this letter.
I...
Take it. That's better. Now listen, Hanson.
I'm not listening to... The mask. You're the Green Hornet.
Now you do as I say, or I'll let you have some of this gas.
What do you want?
That letter tells you what to do, Hanson. You can take it or leave it.
Suppose I refuse.
Read it first and then decide. If you want to go on running your trolleys, you'll do as I say.
And the ace of spades. That's 40 smackers you owe me, Ethel.
Shut up and deal.
Regular sucker, ain't you? Next thing you know, you won't have none of that dough Fisher gave you.
What the cards down, Moran?
Huh?
Who's butting in?
Why, the guy's mask.
Keep your hands on the table.
Hey, I know who you are. That mask you're wearing. You're the Green Hornet.
The Hornet? Let me out of here. I ain't hanging around.
Back in that chair and listen. You two, Atwell.
We ain't done nothing to you.
You two are experts on fixing streetcars, aren't you?
Now, wait a minute.
That's all I know about you two.
I tell you, you got us wrong.
Well, cut it out, Atwell. This guy's the Green Hornet. We ain't fooling with him. Okay. Sure were the guys that done a job on them trolleys.
At Fisher's orders, eh?
Listen, Hornet.
You heard me? Talk.
You know it all anyway. What's the sense of asking us? Sure it was Fisher.
Hey, who you calling?
I'm calling your boss.
For what?
He's going to meet us at the car barns.
What?
We ain't going to the car barns.
Well, I want conversation from you, too. I'll ask for it.
Yeah, but we...
And don't move, understand? This gun has gas enough to take care of both of you. Hello, Fisher.
You
are... This is the Green Hornet talking. That's what I said, the Green Hornet. Moran, come here.
Me?
Fisher's on the other end of this phone. He doesn't believe it's the Green Hornet is calling. Convince him.
Hello, boss? Yeah, this is Moran. It's him, all right.
That's enough. And get this, Fisher. I'm going over to the car barns with these two stooges of yours. Yes, tonight. I expect to meet you there inside half an hour. Never mind why. If you expect that bus franchise of yours to go through, you'll be there. Now, your whole scheme will be blown higher than a kite.
You can't do this, Hornet. You can't make us go over there.
You heard what I said. Get moving.
Not on your life.
In that case, I'll call the police. They'll be glad to know who's responsible for that trolley trouble.
Oh, hold on.
That's better. Now, you're being smart.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go with you, Hornet.
Remember, one false move...
You won't need the rod, Hornet. We're going.
All right. Come on, you rats, march.
Pretty slow tonight, Lowry. Nothing but a couple of disturbing the peace charges. Stuff like that.
Well, as long as I'm covering the police news, I might as well keep hanging around. Never can tell when something's going to pop.
That's what we're here for. Say, whatever happened to that big lug that used to work for Mr. Reed?
You mean Mike Axford, dog?
Now, who else would I be meaning? The way that guy used to get in my hair. Him and his theories. And every last one of them wrong.
The boss got a letter from him the other day. He's out west.
Oh, he is, eh? Well, all I hope is he stays there.
Don't bank on it too much, Doyle. He may come back before...
Police headquarters. Sergeant Doyle speaking.
Police, this is Hanson, president of the Street Railways.
Yeah, what's wrong, Mr. Hanson?
Earlier this evening, I got a letter from the Green Hornet.
What is that name? Did you say Green Hornet?
Holy mackerel, Doyle.
Quiet, Lowry. Keep talking, Mr. Hanson.
I'd prefer to have you come out here to my place at once. It's on the corner.
I know where it is. A squad car will be out there with me in it. What's up?
I'll explain that when you arrive.
Okay. The Green Hornet, is it? Well, here's where the Hornet loses his sting.
That's what you think, Doyle. I want to be around when you try.
Say, listen, Hornet, what's the idea of Atwell and me doing a job on this trolley?
Yeah, don't tell me you're working the same racket that Fisher's been doing.
Keep working. You'll learn no reason soon enough.
Hard work using this file with only a flashlight to give us light.
Put some soap on that file. I don't want any unexpected visitors.
What's the difference? The regular car barn's on the next block. Repair shop's empty after midnight.
Sure, nobody's gonna butt in. Nobody could even hear us. Hey, you turned off the flashlight. We can't see nothing.
Quiet.
Must be Fisher, Hornet.
Keep quiet.
Don't either of you try to move. I can see your figures plainly against the window.
Right, Atwell. Where are you?
That light. It's blinding me.
Over beside the others, Fisher.
What? The Hornet, Fisher. He's got us.
I knew that phone call would bring you down here in a hurry.
So it is true. That phone call did come from the Green Hornet.
I told you.
I wasn't sure, but I couldn't chance it.
He made us.
What do you want?
Drop that wrench, Atwell.
That's better. Keep your hands high.
What are you after, Hornet? Is it money?
You see these, Fisher?
Huh?
Green Hornet stickers.
Yeah, you're in a spot, Fisher. Suppose I plaster this trolley with these stickers. Put them all over.
Go ahead. That has nothing to do with me.
No. The city council will think the Green Hornet caused the streetcar accident. Hanson will be vindicated. What will happen to your bus franchise then?
Let the streetcars go and run.
Exactly, Fisher.
Hornet, I'll give you $20,000.
I want more than that.
$30,000 if you forget the scheme.
I don't mean money, Fisher. All I want from you is your signature.
My signature?
Either you confess your part in these trolley crashes or those stickers go on.
Well, whichever I do, I'm finished.
Right. Either way, you lose.
He's got you, boss.
You're bluffing, Hornet.
Am I? What can you possibly get out of it if I confess?
Nothing personally. Only the satisfaction of knowing that your dirty scheme has been ruined. You better hurry, Fisher. The police will be here any minute.
The cops?
Hey.
What? You're not serious.
All right, Fisher, the stickers go on.
No, wait, I'll sign. Give me time to get away before they come. Here. Pen's right here in my pocket.
And here's the confession.
Pretty sure of yourself, weren't you?
Hurry.
Turn the flashlight on a minute, Hornet, so I can see what
Now, put him up.
What gun?
Stand back, Hornet. Thought I was reaching for my pen, huh?
Nice work, boss. You had a shoulder holster, huh?
You can't get away with this.
I am getting away with it. Drop that gun of yours.
I said you might. Come on, drop it.
Now, Hornet, we'll get you out of this place before any police arrive. All right, Atwell, grab him.
Okay.
Yeah, we got him.
Listen to me, Fisher.
You listen to me, Hornet. You're going to...
You... What... Yes,
Fisher.
Now for you too.
Yes. Hold him, Moran. Let me get him. Will you not?
Now you take care of him. I've got Moran.
My arm.
Good thing you were here. Fisher's gassed. He's too knocked out.
You jujitsu on Atwell, huh?
Yes, sir. I was behind the guard.
Sorry, I thought the others didn't.
Mulan.
Yeah. Rand and Atwell will be coming to in a minute. Quick, pick up that gun.
Very well.
We'll leave this confession beside Fisher. It's not signed, but I think it'll serve the purpose anyway.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now we'll get back in the shadows beside that window and see what happens.
The brief
back here with me. There's no light bomb to spot us.
Oh, my. I don't know. Here they are. Colonel Slash, I this way. Hey, these two mugs have been stopped. They're knocked out. Doyle, here's Fisher. Yeah, Chelsea and Codfish has been gassed.
Officer, these two men are Moran and Atwell. They work in the repair shop.
Dirty work, I'll bet. Look at this. The axle on this trolley's filed almost all the way through.
He's coming around.
Listen, don't tell the cops.
Hornets.
Go on, Atwell. Keep talking.
The cops.
You and Moran did this job, didn't you?
Hey, smell it, Atwell. You're in too deep already. Yeah, but we was working for Fisher. That's how. Fisher's the guy.
How?
I tell you, Fisher paid us to wreck all them trolleys.
And you swear to that in court?
Sure, I will. Sure. Moran, too.
Does this mean Fisher will be implicated?
Implicated? Mr. Hansen, Fisher will be convicted. He might have got away with it before, but now that we found him here with these two rats...
Yeah, right in the middle of another job. He's sunk, Mr. Hansen.
Hey, Sergeant, look at this. I found it next to Fisher's body.
Yeah, give me that.
That's for the police, Lowry. What the...
Hey, it's a confession, but... Uh-oh. It isn't signed.
Don't worry. It will be when we get Fisher down to headquarters. Take those lugs out.
Oh, my jaw.
Come on, you. Grab the other one, Joe.
Yeah.
We'll come back for Fisher later.
Well, there you are, Hansen. You don't have to worry about the bus franchise when this hits the front page.
What gets me is what happened to these guys.
What do you think, Doyle? The Green Hornet.
Huh?
If I hadn't followed the instructions in that letter, we'd never have caught Fisher.
What do you mean, Mr. Hansen?
His letter told me to call you. At first, I wasn't going to trust him. Then I thought it over.
Hey, we haven't seen that letter yet.
It was such a rush.
You got it with you?
Yes, I think so. It's in longhand.
Longhand?
Give, Hansen. Maybe that handwriting can be traced.
Well, sure it is. But I doubt if you can trace it.
I'll take that.
When I first looked at it, the handwriting seemed to be disguised.
Come on, Doyle. Come on, open it up.
Hey, there ain't no writing on this page. It's blank.
Well, maybe you need glasses, Doyle.
I tell you, it's blank. Look.
Well, what do you know?
I'm positive there was writing on that paper before.
Well, there ain't any now. All there is this here Green Hornet seal in the corner.
Doyle, I get it. It's disappearing ink.
Disappearing ink?
Yeah. Try and trace that. Man, that Green Hornet thinks of everything.
And I thought I had me hooks on him.
What's that?
The Hornet's car.
There, out the window.
That's him, all right.
And there he goes.
Oh, I've been looking for that car.
Well, look at it travel. Well, Doyle, I guess the Hornet still got his sting.
Ah.
Yeah, but don't worry. Your name will go in the papers anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I nabbed Fisher and them, too.
And with a little help. Got a phone around here I can use, Mr. Hansen? The Sentinel's going to get an earful of front page stuff. And boy, I'd like to see the Clarion try and beat this yarn.
Trouble Hits the Trolleys, Program 348 in the Green Hornet radio series, from June 8th of 1939 on the Mutual Broadcasting System, Al Hodge, our star. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. If you'd like to get in touch with the radio theater, you can do so by email. Our address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. That's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to submit your questions, comments, suggestions, and requests. If you'd like to listen to this and other full-length episodes of the Radio Theater at your convenience, or if you'd like to view detailed program playlists, then please visit our blog and website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. That's qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you'd like the playlist or streaming audio for this episode, please look for Upstate Radio Theater, program number 1911. We'll turn to some classic comedy to wrap up this hour of old-time radio, as we have an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly. This broadcast marked their sixth anniversary on the air, the program having been sponsored all those 6 years by the Johnson Wax Company of Racine, Wisconsin. This broadcast from April 15th of 1941 on NBC with the husband and wife team of Marion and Jim Jordan and the usual cast, including Bill Thompson, Harlow Wilcox, and Harold Perry. It's Fibber Needs Glasses.
The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Let's Break the Ice. I read an interesting letter from a talented lady who said she and her husband always listen to Fibber McGee and Molly on Tuesday nights. Never miss it because it's her husband's favorite radio show. But he's never bought her any Johnson's Wax or self-polishing glow coat. Well, that was hard for me to figure out. My wife never asks me if she can buy anything like that. But let me make just this one little point about Johnson's glow coat. Forget for a minute all the work it saves your little wife. Forget the compliments she'll get from your friends when they see those gleaming linoleum floors wearing their protective coats of Glow Coat polish. But think for a moment about this fact. The Johnson's Glow Coat makes linoleum last much longer, protects it from wear and tear. And I think you'll agree with me that not to insist upon your wife using Glow Coat is just bad business. Remember, Glow Coat needs no rubbing or buffing. It's self-polishing. Buy some tomorrow. There's been quite an argument going on this last week at 79 Wistful Vista. Mrs. McGee says her husband should go see an oculist. Mr. McGee says he'll do no such thing.
Oh.
So, here sitting in the office of Wistful Vista's leading oculist, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, now, stop your fidgeting, McGee. The doctor will see you in just a few minutes.
I don't care if he never sees me. This whole idea is silly. I don't need glasses.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I suppose you were just kidding this morning when you yelled, "Hey, I found a quarter."
Well.
And then you picked up the manhole cover.
Well, shucks. There's nothing really wrong with my eyes at all. I just strained them a little looking for that comet, that's all.
Well, I'm glad to hear you even admit that. Heavenly days, it's no disgrace to wear glasses.
Oh, you just say that on account of Uncle Dennis.
He doesn't wear glasses.
Oh, no. He's worn out most of ours, one way and another.
Well, you'll admit he carries it like a gentleman.
Yeah. He even hiccups with a Harvard accent. Look, Molly, you know very well my eye strain is just a temporary condition. I don't...
All right, Doc. Sure is a load off my mind.
Oh, hello there, old-timer. Been getting your eyes examined?
Yep. And as the chemist says, when the dye factory blew up, I come out with flying colors.
Well, what did the doctor tell you?
Oh, he says I didn't have a thing to worry about, daughter. Says I'll be reading newspapers without glasses when I'm 95.
Oh.
Oh, that's swell, old-timer. I'm glad to hear it. What's the matter with your eyes?
Got a twitch in one of them, Johnny.
Oh. Nervous?
Not till I had my face slapped the third time.
They thought you were a masher, eh? Well, as I always says, old-timer, the trouble with flirting is that you're generally flirting with trouble.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, which was t'other day while I was sitting in a little booth getting my pants pressed because the garden needed some rain. It always rains when I get my pants pressed, which is why they don't have any women in the Weather Bureau.
but the way you heard it...
Oh, yeah. One feller says to t'other feller...
Hey, says.
See where a young college feller pole vaulted more than 15 feet to a new world's record last Saturday. Ain't that wonderful? Yeah, says t'other feller. But he never could have done it without that big stick. Well, I guess the doctor will be seeing you in a minute, kid.
Well, thanks, Mr. Oldtimer. You say he thought your eyes were all right, huh?
Yep. Says I'll be reading newspapers without glasses when I'm 95.
Ooh.
On one condition.
What's the condition?
Gotta learn to read. So long, sir.
He is, McGee.
Search me, but I'd swear he wears a TP.
No. You mean a frappe.
I
I do not. A frappe is a small sedan.
Go on, that's a coupe.
Well, then what's a teepee?
A teepee is a wigwam.
That's what I've been trying to say. To keep his wigwam, he has to wear a teepee.
Oh, dear. That joke was old when radio was just a funny noise from Schenectady. Oh, I wish that doctor'd hurry.
No, we're not in any hurry. Besides, that other guy's ahead of us.
Who?
That guy standing over there in the corner. Hey, take your hat off, mister. There's a lady present.
McGee, that's a hat rack.
Huh? Oh. Well, I just...
All right, Mr. McGee, you're next, I believe. Will you step in here, please?
Okay, Doc.
You may come, too, if you wish, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, thank you, Doc.
Now, you understand, I'm just doing this to humor my wife, Doc. My eyes are as good as they ever were.
We'll see. We'll just give you a preliminary examination, Mr. McGee. Yes. There's nothing to worry about.
Who's worrying?
I am.
What about?
Oh, nothing in particular. I just worry. Gives me that busy professional frown, you know. Very valuable. Impresses people. Yes. Now, first, Mr. McGee, I want you to read the chart for me.
XKMZOPLBW.
Isn't that wonderful, Doctor?
It certainly is. Now, I'll put up the chart and see if he can do it. Now then, Mr. McGee, read the top line.
The top line from the bottom?
Quit stalling, McGee. Read the chart.
Well, he cheated. That ain't the chart I'm familiar with.
Look, Mr. McGee, I'm afraid I'll have to relax the muscles of your eyes before I can examine them properly. They're a bit strained, you know.
Oh, well, how will you do that, Doctor?
We'll put drops in them.
Oh.
It relaxes the muscles and enlarges the pupil.
Oh, yeah.
His vision will be blurred for a few hours, and then I want him to come back. Say, in about 3 hours. Yes.
No. Wait a minute, Doctor.
Now, McGee.
Huh?
Who knows best? You or the doctor? You don't either. Go ahead, Doctor.
Very well. Open your eyes wide, McGee. Not your mouth, your eyes. That's it. Yes. 1, 2, there. Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
No.
Oh, I guess I'll live through it. I ain't scared.
Well, then what are you trembling
for? I'm not trembling.
The doctor ought to know, dear. You're holding his hand.
Huh? Oh. I thought that was yours, Molly. Excuse me, Doc.
That's all right. I'll have the circulation back in that hand in no time. Well, that's all for now, Mr. McGee. Remember, back here in 3 hours. Yes.
Well, now, what do we do in the meantime?
Well, we might go sit in a movie.
Don't be silly. You couldn't see the picture and the dialogue wouldn't make sense.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. McGee. Who is he to criticize senseless dialogue? Don't you worry about your eyes, Mr. McGee. There may be nothing at all wrong, you know. Nothing at all.
Oh, I'm not worried, Doc. All us McGees have had good eyes, particularly the men in the family. Why, even when I was a tiny baby, people used to say, "Can you imagine such beautiful eyes in a mug like that?" Eyes of Muggin' McGee, I was known as. Eyes of Muggin' McGee, a magnificent masculine mess of muscle and mental magnitude, mentioned in Milady's monthly magazines as the mighty male who managed to mesmerize most of the merry minxes of Monte Carlo and the majority of Marcel's maidens of Manhattan and many of the magnetic misses of Mississippi, Missouri, Michigan, Montana, Minneapolis, Minnesota. A merry mass of manhood with a touch of Irish elf. But let's get going, Molly, or I'll believe this stuff myself.
Thank you.
swell idea of yours, Molly, stopping in here for a bite to eat instead of sitting in the park.
How are your eyes, dearie? Is the medicine wearing off?
Oh, sure. I can see better now than I... Whoops!
What's the matter?
I guess I'm kind of clumsy today. I dropped the top off the ketchup bottle and into the sugar bowl.
That was an olive, and you dropped it in the cream pitcher, and there's no ketchup on the table. 70 days, it's a good thing I'm with you, or goodness knows what. Uh-oh. McGee.
Huh?
There's Mrs. Uppington over at that table behind the post. Hmm.
What's the old war horse eating? A bale of hay all gotten?
Let me see. No, she's polishing off a big piece of chocolate chiffon pie.
Mm, her and her diet.
And the next time she tries to tell me about living on Melba toast and skim milk, I'd... Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? Imagine meeting you here.
Oh, how do you do, my dear? Good day, Miss McGee.
Hi, Uppy.
Mrs. Uppington is over there, dearie. I'm Mrs. McGee. You're looking very well for yourself, Abigail, old girl.
Thank you, my dear. Though I must do something about my weight. I'm simply gaining ounces, you know.
Oh, cut it out, Uppy, cut it out. You got a wonderful figure, Uppy. In fact, I never seen you look handsomer than you do today. You ain't fat. You're just chubby, in a cute way.
Oh, flatterer.
Besides, what if you do gain a little, Abigail? I always said what this country needs is less hustle and more bustle.
And that's a mighty ducky little chapeau you're sporting today, too, Uppy.
Miss McGee, I am not wearing a hat.
Huh? Oh, I thought that was an airplane. Well, you're always too far ahead of the styles. I thought you had one of them new off-of-the-head hats.
Oh, now you say such sweet things, Miss McGee.
I have a tough time doing it, though.
My head is easily turned, you know.
Well, that's because your neck is so skinny, Abigail.
Molly Uppy seems to have took on entirely new personality lately.
You think
Looking at her right now, she kind of vibrates. She just glows. There's a kind of a radiance about her.
Oh, no, Mr. McGee, you silly boy. You never talked to me like that before.
Of course he didn't. He never had an Oculus put drops in his eyes before either.
Oh, you poor boy. Now, doesn't it make everything look horribly distorted?
Oh,
you mean all those nice things you... Well, I have never been so insulted. Goodbye, you squirt.
Molly, did I say something wrong?
Oh, no. But I don't think that was government-infected bologna you were dishing out. Come on, McGee, let's go.
Okay, you paid the check?
Yes, I did. Can I help you with your coat, dearie?
No, thanks, I got it.
You got it all right. You got it inside out.
Huh?
Here, let me. McGee, this isn't your coat.
Huh? It isn't? Well, where is mine? I put it right on that rack there.
Oh, dear, somebody must have taken yours by mistake and left this one.
Huh?
Look, here's the owner's name on the inside of the pocket. Wallace Wimple.
Wallace Wimple, eh? Well, whoever he is, he's got a lot of moxie swiping my coat. Wait till I get my hands on that guy. He'll wish he'd never picked
on... Well, hello there, folks. What's the matter?
Hi, Gildersleeve.
No, it isn't Mr. Gildersleeve, dearie. That's Mr. Wilcox.
Oh.
He's being examined for glasses, Mr. Wilcox, and he's got drops in his eyes.
Hey, Harlow, somebody swiped my overcoat and left this one instead.
Well, you're lucky. That's a good-looking coat.
Well, now, we'll have to find the owner. Do you know a Mr. Wallace Wimple, Mr. Wilcox?
Wimple. Wimple. Not Wallace Wimple.
Yeah, you know him?
Me know Wallace Wimple?
Oh, boy,
why, say, when I first started working for Johnson's Wax, before I even knew what a wonderful thing Johnson's Wax was for beautifying and protecting floors and furniture and woodwork against dust and dirt and dampness, before I even found out what a blessing Johnson's Wax was for particular housewives, and that was, well, let's see, we've been on the air for Johnson's Wax 6 years today, and I worked for them 4 years before that, that's 10 years. Yes, sir, 10 years. And in all that time, I've never known anybody by the name of Wallace Wimple. Isn't that amazing?
Why, it's unbelievable.
Wilcox is your real name, O'Sullivan.
O'Sullivan? No, why?
Oh, I just wondered. You can find more heels to drag a sales talk in by than anybody.
don't say that, pal. You're not a heel. You're a very nice little guy.
course, you're not too bright, and you talk too much, but outside of that...
McGee, stop swinging at Mr. Wilcox. Wait till you can see better.
Oh, that's okay, Molly. He was just kidding.
Yeah.
And so was I. We can't spoil our 6th anniversary together by fighting. Look, Fibber, why don't you keep this coat and just call it good luck?
Because I'm too honest and it don't fit. Come on, Molly, we gotta go find Wimple. Oh, why didn't somebody tell me my shirt tail was sticking out?
Look out, Jerry, look out!
Who threw that? What the...
We tried to tell you that wasn't your shirt tail. That was the tablecloth.
Oh, sure.
The King's Men sing, "Let's Get Away From It All."
Gotta go to work on the 8:15. Through the same routine. Oh, every night I go to bed and then get up and start all over again. Let's take a boat to Bermuda. Let's take a plane to St. Paul. Let's ride a kayak to Quincy or Nyack. Let's get away from it all. Let's take a trip in a trailer. No need to come back at all. Let's take a powder to Boston for chowder. Let's get away from it all. We're gonna fly away. We're gonna fly away. We're gonna shut the door and lock the gate and let the bill collectors wait. Hurry up, celebrate before we get too old to make it. Take a boat to Honolulu. We'll take a clipper over China's wall. We'll drop a line to Uncle Willie from the steamer bound for Chile. Let's get away from it all. Buy a ticket down to Rio, or you can take along a Spanish shawl. We'll take a passage on a freighter just across the old equator. Let's get away from it all. We'll look up all your aunts and all your uncles and your cousins, and we'll camp right at their door. They may go broke, but holy smoke, we'll never worry anymore. They'll never miss me at the office. I'm never going back there at all. We'll never be at home when the butcher and the baker and the tailor and the landlord call. We're gonna leave them flat, so baby, grab your hat. Let's get away from it. Let's get away from it all.
We knew who this Wallace Wimple was. Did you ask the manager of the gas company?
Yes, and the light company and the water company.
Maybe we should hire a private detective.
I'm going to do something. I wish my eyes would clear up. As it is, I wouldn't know this Wallace Wimple if I saw him. Ow, stag ratted butt. What's the idea of jabbing me with that cigar? Who do you think you are?
Now, McGee.
Teach him to stand around in front of cigar stores and bump into people. I got a good notion to slap you down, bud. What do you think of that? Well, ain't you got anything to say?
Indians don't talk much, McGee.
Is he an Indian?
Yes, and a wooden one at that.
Huh? Oh. Excuse me, Chief. I guess I was off the reservation.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi there, little girl. I can't see you very good, but I recognize your voice. I got some stuff in my eyes, and I don't see very well for a while yet.
Why?
Well, they do that so they can examine your eyes better.
What's the matter with them, mister? You got astigmatism?
Got what, sis?
Astigmatism.
Shucks, sis. We could have had a cute routine if you'd only mispronounced that.
I know it, but it would have been kind of corny, I bet you.
Well, maybe it would. And seeing that this is our 6th anniversary for Johnson's Wax, maybe we better go easy on the corn.
On the what?
Corn.
I'm hungry.
What's the matter with you, sis? You a food hoarder? You save it for a friend?
No, but I gotta feed my puppy and my kitty and a turkle. And last Sunday, my papa gave me Easter bunny.
Oh, he did, huh?
Hmm?
I says he did, huh?
He did what?
Your father gave you an Easter bunny.
Gee, did he?
That rabbit, you said he did.
I know it.
Well, then what... Now, look, sis.
Did you ever hear of a guy named Wallace Wimple?
Sure.
When?
Just now. Why, Dad?
Because I gotta find him, that's why. And say, by the way, if you ever hear of anyone named Wallace Wimple, come and tell me, will you? And I'll give you a nickel.
It's worth 10 cents, I bet you.
Oh. Okay, 10 cents.
You mean you'll give me 10 cents if I tell you how to find him, do you, please?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Give me the dime.
You know how I can find him?
Sure I do, I bet.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay, here's 10 cents. What do I do?
Look in the telephone book.
Hey, Molly, lead me to the nearest phone booth, will you?
All right, dearie. I don't know how we overlook such an obvious idea.
Well, sometimes the things right under your nose are the hardest to see. As the high school kid says when he tries to raise a mustache. Hey, Molly.
What?
Does drops in your eyes affect your other muscles? I'm developing an awful limp.
Oh, it isn't serious, dearie. You're walking with one foot in the gutter.
Let's go down to Kramer's drugstore and see if we can...
Well, well, well. Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, Fibber.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Is that you, Throcky?
Well, what's the matter with you, little chum? What are they leading you around for?
Oh, don't drip so much, you big drip. You make me sick with all
McGee's
that.
McGee's been to the oculist, Mr. Gildersleeve, and he's got drops in his eyes.
Not that it bothers me at the moment, Gildersleeve. You always did look like a big blur to me anyway.
Is that so?
Yes, that's...
Why, you astigmatic little biological error? For 2 cents, I'd pop you one right on that little receding chin of yours. And if you haven't got 2 cents, you can open an account with me.
In the eyes, Gildersleeve. I can handle you with one hand tied behind me and juggling 3 Japanese with my feet.
You couldn't juggle the accounts in a piggy bank, you little vacuum.
Gildersleeve?
Yes?
Here. For goodness sakes, boys, stop it. Don't you realize this is our 6th anniversary for Johnson's Wax?
Well.
Let's all be friends at least for one day.
Well, all right. For one day.
Day it is, Gildersleeve. But what are you doing tomorrow?
Nothing.
Okay. Suppose I meet you in back of the firehouse and slap a few of your cheap gold fillings down your noisy epiglottis.
You're a hard man, McGee. Goodbye, George!
Hey, Trocky.
What is it, chum?
You know a guy named Wallace Wimple?
Wallace Wimple. Wallace Wimple. Oh, Wallace Wimple. Why, certainly.
Oh,
fine. An old college chum of mine.
Oh.
Yes. He used to sleep in the next seat of me in chapel.
For goodness sakes, well, where does he live, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Wait a minute. I have it right down here in my address book. Wimple. W-W-W. Here's Wilma.
Wilma, huh?
Wilma's a horse. She's running in the Derby this year. W-W. Ah, here it is. Wally Wimple. 1345 Oak Street. And when you see him...
Taxi! Taxi!
Okay, Molly, let's go.
Folks, what's this all about? I might...
Oh, go cat a tip at you, big mug. I'll see you tomorrow behind the firehouse.
Oh! 1345 Oak Street, driver. And step on it now. Step on it.
Watch the step, dearie. Here, take hold of my hand.
Now, you let me handle this, Molly. This guy may be a professional crook, and I might have to get tough with him.
Well, what if he's a big bruiser?
Well, I,
Yeah.
Hi, bud. You Wallace Wimple?
Yes, I am.
Is he a big guy, Molly?
No, he's just a little guy, McGee.
Yes, eh? Look here, Wimple. You got a lot of nerve swiping my coat out of that restaurant. I got a notion to kick you around and teach you respect for other people's property. What's your idea of taking my coat?
Well, bless my soul, I didn't even know I had taken the wrong one.
Well, is this your coat, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, it certainly is, and thank you so much for returning it.
Is that all you got to say, Wimple? Ain't you going to apologize?
Yes, I certainly am. It was a very ridiculous mistake. But at the time, I couldn't tell one coat from another.
Well, why not?
Well, I went to an oculist this morning, and he put some drops in my eyes. Isn't that silly?
River and Molly will be back in just a moment. Have you heard about the special bargain offer that many Johnson dealers are now making? It's one you'll not want to miss, so listen carefully. For a limited time, many dealers are now giving a long-handled glow coat applier free with a quart of Johnson self-polishing glow coat at the regular price of 98 cents. You'll find this applier very handy. It's washable, may be used over and over again, and it makes the application of glow coat amazingly simple. And speaking of saving, glow coat, of course, is a famous labor saver. It's the number one easy-to-use floor polish wherever you go. It needs no rubbing or buffing. You just apply and let dry, and in 20 minutes, your floor gleams with a rich, long-lasting polish. Glow coat keeps the colors of linoleum fresh and bright, makes the linoleum itself last much longer. See your dealer right away while this money-saving offer is still available. Ask for this long-handled applier free with one quart of Johnson's Glow Coat at the regular price of 98 cents.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's program marks the beginning of our seventh year on the air for Johnson's Wax. And the people in both Racine and Wistful Vista want to thank you all for your loyalty and friendship.
That's right. If it hadn't been for you folks, why, we would...
Telegram for Kim and McGee and Molly.
I'll take it, Wallace. Thanks.
Let me read it, dearie. Remember your eyes. Oh, how nice. Listen, McGee.
Yeah?
Congratulations to Fibber McGee and Molly on their sixth anniversary.
Oh.
You have done a wonderful job, and we hope your sponsor appreciates you as much as we do. We hope they sign you up for another 6 years.
Oh, shucks.
That'll be 89 cents, please. It's collect.
It is not collect. I paid for that, Philip. Good night.
Good night, Al.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
From April 15th, 1941 on NBC, Fibber McGee and Molly, the episode Fibber Needs Glasses. Harold Perry's Gildersleeve character was so popular on Fibber McGee and Molly that about 4 months after this broadcast, he would be spun off into his own very successful sitcom on NBC, The Great Gildersleeve. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I sincerely hope you enjoyed my selections. Please join me again when you can for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.